So imagine if you're a horse breeder and you've got this really fancy bloodline mare, and you know you're going to make millions of dollars off of every horse you sell, every colt you sell, and your breeding program starts out by, when the mare goes into heat, you open up the barn door and you let her go out. And then whatever she comes back with, that's your breeding stock. That's analogous to naturally mating your queens. Like you don't know who is contributing to the heredity. You could be somewhat certain, but not 100% certain. So in any animal breeding scenario, in any agriculture, if the producers who made the crosses had to deal with what we have to deal with bees, they'd all be wailing and gnashing their teeth. So keep that in mind. Naturally mating your queens, and if you're getting good queens and they're naturally mated, you're doing a heck of a job, because you're only selecting from basically half of the cross. There are ways around that, but they're not easy. So with artificial insemination, we don't have this. We know 100%. We know who the parents are, and we know who the on each side. And so we get rapid results for specific traits if we want to get there really quickly. And then down here it just says, you can also, the other way, if you're using artificial insemination and you're not making good crosses, you can get really bad results really quickly too. And sometimes that unknowingly happens when you get too closely related in a cross. You get a bad brood pattern. But not often, and it doesn't happen at all if you're keeping good records. Another really good and important thing with artificial insemination is I can get semen from Sue Kobe. And Sue Kobe can collect her semen from her breeding program, and it goes into a capillary tube, and she mails it to me, and I get it, and I unpackage it, and Kelly gets it and puts it into the AI apparatus, and we can inseminate virgins with Sue Kobe's breeding population. That's really cool. That's a great thing. You can't really do, I mean, we could take breeders or take virgins and ship them to Sue, and she could make them out there where her breeders are, and that's a lot of work. So that's terrific. I can also send semen to Europe or to Asia or to whatever country will allow it. You'd be surprised how few countries allow semen because they're worried about a small hive beetle. Don't laugh. It's a law. It's crazy. That's a law. That's the EU law. Might be a danger of small hive beetle in semen. it's pretty interesting. But that's another reason why you can use AI. Good use for AI. And there are three basic areas with doing AI. One is the drone biology and the management, the drone component, and then there's virgin queen biology and management. And then lastly, there's the after the queen is inseminated, how you keep her and what you do with her. We'll go over these. And again, if you have any questions, raise your hand, feel free to stop me. Drones. All right, so drones take 32 to 36 days to be sexually mature. When you're planning your mating, you have to use that. You have to count back and then think about when your queens are going to be of the right age and coordinate. Drones are really fragile. A lot of people don't know this, but once you catch a drone and you put it into a cage, it'll live by itself for about 30 minutes, and then it'll poop out. And there's a very short time period between when you catch the drone and when it will die. if there are workers around to tend to the drones, they can last a couple days. But once they're in a cage, the race is on. And they must be sexually mature to yield viable semen. So that's, you know, in this period here. So what this means here is you can go out and collect a whole bunch of drones, and if they're not of the right age, you can't use them. So it's good to know that you're getting good, mature drones.
Question for you. The 32 to 36 days, is that from when the egg is laid or from when it hatches?
That's from egg to
okay.
All the way through. So it's like a little over a month.
So this 30 minutes would say that they got, if they were to mate at the end of that 30 minutes and die, that if they did 15 miles an hour, and you know, that'd be 7.5 miles they could make it before they had to do their thing. That's the farthest way they could be. I mean, they got to hit a congregation area, so
they don't last for very long. They, like, and that's a great point. Like, we were thinking that, like, this whole concept of they go out, they fly around for hours, and they come back. No way. If they're going to be following the drone congregation model, they're going to go out. They're going to do their thing for, like, 20 minutes. Then they're going to come back and refuel. Then they'll go out again. So this concept of these drones hanging around for hours.
So you got to find a congregation within a certain radius, and it's got to be there, or there's no breeding going to take place.
That's right. Yep. So, of course, nobody has done, you know, a paper on that, because you've got to do all the logistics of where the DCA is and how to find it and how to do the statistics. And, you know, it's all money with bee research. So that's an unknown. But from our perspective with handling drones, you can assume that, yeah, the DCAs have to be pretty close by. Okay, so for collecting drones, to use them in artificial insemination, there are a couple different strategies. This is a Tom Glenn drone colony. And what Tom would do, Tom Glenn used to produce a lot of the artificially inseminated queens that had DSH. And he would collect drones after they were pupated. He would take the frames and he would bring them back to one colony and put them in. And they were from all different DSH colonies. So basically what he was doing is he was creating a little drone congregation area in this colony. So it was basically a super above an excluder with all these drones. And after 31 days, he'd assume that most of them were mature, and he would peel back this plastic and get these guys out and put them into a little carry cage and walk 15 feet from where this was to where he did his insemination, which was in an old, like a travel trailer, a little small travel trailer. That's where he had his AI set up. It was pretty cool. And that worked very well for him. Our colonies aren't as centralized as his, so we do a different method, but this works fine. The only disadvantage to this is these drones have not flown, so what are they full of when you collect the semen from them?
Poop.
So it can be pretty messy to collect the semen from them. And after a while of getting drone poop all over you, you're definitely wishing you were doing something else. So this is a standard USDA Harbo, even before Harbo, designed for a drone cage. It's basically a square wooden frame. It has queen excluder on one side, and then it has Velcro on the back with a screen. And the idea with this is you catch the drones, you put them in one by one into this cork, and then when you were getting ready to inseminate, you'd stick the whole cage into a larger cage and pull that Velcro off, and all the drones would fly out in this little cage and fly around, and then as you needed them, you could reach in through like a glove box and pull out a drone, use it, pull out another drone. We did that for 2 years, and then we decided, you know, this is a lot of work. So instead, we just pull them. We don't even use that flying cage anymore. And we just pull them out of the corner of one of these, and I just pull them out one by one, and we don't even bother letting them fly, because they're all ready to go anyway. And I'll show you that. You'll see the way we collect. It's different than the bank on the top of the box. So you know the drones are pretty mature. But this is just what these cages look like. This will hold about, 100, 250 drones. If you get any more than that, the drones will overheat and will all die, and that's no fun, because then you have to start all over again. And these cages are good because this can go in this box, and there's a queen excluder here or not, but in this box, and the workers will come up and take care of these drones. So you can collect them in the afternoon when they're flying, and if you want to, you can inseminate the next morning. But any longer than that, they start to die off. And sometimes on a long day, when you've collected drones for 3 hours, the last thing you want to do is get the semen out of them and start to mess with that. You want to eat and, wash and check your email and stuff like that.
Is there a reason that it's upside down?
What, which is upside down?
Except the handles are upside down.
I don't understand.
That's a lid.
It's a cord.
That's just a dado cut.
Yeah.
That's not the regular scallop like the second one below.
Right.
It's just this is different design.
That's some other homemade box.
It's easier.
Okay, so this is how we collect drones, and the USDA does the same, and some people do this. I think Sue does it sometimes. But what's really great with this method is this is a colony. It's got a number on it. I know who the breeder queen is, so I know exactly what those drones are. So I can, depending on my order, I can go to different colonies and collect from different, get a different blend of drones based on the cross I want to make. This is old queen excluder material, the old zinc kind, and it's got gorilla tape, and it just goes right in the front of the entrance. We run 3-inch entrances. I don't know how we ended up with that, but that's what we always use, and the bees are fine with the 3-inch entrances. And then that is a smaller area you have to exclude, but this goes on usually in the main season about 3 p.m. Sometimes it's earlier, sometimes it's later. It all depends on the yard. But it goes on at 3 p.m. And when the drones leave, they leave through the top here and they fly. And then when they come back, they're not aware of this and they try to go in that entrance. And you can catch them, and you catch them one by one. So what this involves doing is putting this on in one yard, putting this on all the colonies that you're going to collect from, and then you just go around like a robot and collect drones as they come in. And you do that for about 25, 30 minutes, and then you're done, and you're out of there. And when drones are yielding really well, it's just amazing how many drones will come in. And that's what it looks like when things are really happening. And you can see, I think you can see, there are a lot of different kinds of drones in this colony. There's some light ones and some dark ones. There's a real dark one, and that's a real light one there. And the worry of drones drifting, so you've got a bee yard, and you've got drones from one colony possibly going into another colony. That is a concern. However, in collecting drones like this for 4 or 5 years in a row now, as you watch the drones leave and come back, they're really specific. They don't drift too much. They know exactly where they're going. We also have in our bee yards, colonies are laid out very irregularly. We don't have long lines. We've got two facing this way, one facing this way, one turned completely around. So the colonies are all different. But the drones pretty much come back to where they left. So I feel pretty sure that we are getting, when we use the drones from this colony, we're getting the drones from this colony. Sure, there might be a little overlap, but so what? A little tiny bit of overlap is a little more diversity, and that's a good thing. And that's an older picture of Kelly and I steering and handling at a drone gauge. That's a real old picture, but this was bringing the cages back and storing them in little nukes with some nurse bees until we were ready to extract the semen. And this was actually in town where we live, and I think somebody walked by here and looked at me and looked at my veil and then walked by really fast. But for some reason, our town, it's not very bee-friendly where we live, but our town has a law that says you can keep bees in the town, so it's kind of nice. We've had a lot of people call and complain about our bees, and then they stop calling. So. Okay, so this is getting into exactly what happens with the collection of the semen, and I'm going to go through this, and I'm going to ask Kelly to fill in anything if I'm leaving anything out. Usually when you're doing insemination, it's one person, and you either one person collects the semen and then does the insemination, or one person collects the semen, stores the semen, and then later on does the insemination. Kelly and I work together as a team because it makes it go faster, and that way it keeps us from both not becoming crazy, because this is really tedious work. And what I usually do is, like, I'll get the drones all ready to go, and then I'll hand them to her in a line, and then all she has to do is pick them up, do the last little squeeze, and collect the semen. So you'll see how that works. Initially, you squeeze the drone a certain way, and usually that kills the drone right then and there, but sometimes it doesn't. So I'm sorry for the people that don't like killing bees. Part of this is killing bees. It's agriculture. Unfortunately, you have to kill them, but that's what you do. Squeeze the head, squeeze the thorax. The endophallus is this... The endophallus is this apparatus here, and it's basically, if you can think of it, as kind of like a catapult that's inside the drone with... I thought about trying to explain this. It's the only way I can. So... there's mucus on the end of the endophallus, and then right at the tip of the endophallus, right at the tip of the mucus is the semen. But this is all curled up inside the drone. And as the drone ejaculates, this comes out like this, and the mucus goes to the end, and then the semen is right on the end. And this is going into the queen. So it's like this kind of motion. So when you squeeze the drone, it's basically this whole thing is coming out. This is filled with air. And it's kind of like almost like a hydraulic device. And it comes out very forcefully, so that if you have a drone that's very ready to ejaculate, you can touch it and you'll literally hear it pop as this thing goes pop. And that, of course, you can't use. That's what's happened there. And since we do this a lot, any inherent humor is kind of lost on us, but I know we're talking about sort of sensuous, slightly sexy stuff here, so you feel free to snicker all you want. So this is a mature drone. You can see that it's got this nice buildup of mucus and some semen there. This is one that's not mature, and there's not that much stuff in here because it hasn't migrated from the testes, the gonads in here. And then as this thing is averted, all this stuff is extra little organs. And Kelly's reported to me that some drones have really weird shaped ones of these. They're like little claspers. Here's that whole endophallus, and at the very tip is the mucus, and then right on the edge is this sort of creamy grayish stuff. That's the semen, that's the sperm. That's where that's the semen, and the sperm is in there, and you'll see what Kelly has to do in order to get this into a capillary tube. But all of this stuff, like, is detail, and it's not for everybody. And, unfortunately, it does take a lot of time, but the results speak for themselves. It's just a lot of... sometimes it's almost too much, and you want to take a break. And as you guys say, go fishing. I love that.
Do you need a magnifying glass? Do you
no, this is all. This is all. Very visible? This is all.
Very visible. Yeah.
The next step is not.
No.
So, seeing the collection is. We'll go through the what it looks like, but basically, you guys. Some of you guys were asking me about this earlier. So, based on our orders, I'll collect. Or Kelly will collect a blend of drones in a container, and that's from a bunch of different colonies. And then as we take them out, we're taking them out one by one. We're hoping that we're not getting too many of one in an order and then one of another. But as we're getting them out, Kelly is collecting from them one by one by one. So that capillary tube is filling up with each drone's amount of semen. And that's what's going to be going back down into the queen. And we can do selection while we're doing that. For example, if I have an order for a really light queen, if I pull out a drone and it's too dark, I won't use it. Or if I have an order for, I don't know, some of the crazy orders we get for like certain things, hairiness, this and that and the other thing. If it doesn't fit, we'll pull it out. And so as you see the drones, as we're getting them ready to ejaculate and Kelly's getting ready to pull up the semen, you can do some selection. You can also select the mite resistance because sometimes drones will have mites on them. And if a drone has a mite on it, you think, well, maybe I don't want to use that drone. Maybe that's promoting mite susceptibility. So sometimes we'll do that too. This last year we had very few mites on any of the drones. It's pretty impressive. So that's what this is all about. This is the syringe that's used. It's basically a tiny micro suction, and then it's basically all hydraulic, so there's like fluid in this long tube, and the fluid is connected through a vacuum to this capillary tube at this end, and then it rides in another glass barrel, and then as Kelly is pulling up, turning this, it makes negative pressure that provides suction that sucks up all the semen. And then at this end, you'll see there's a little tip that is used to collect the semen. This is a nice capillary tube. It's 100 microliters capillary tube. This, I think, was from Tom Glenn that we were using. And what is that? That's $800, basically. It's going rate is $8 a microliter, which is really not worth it. For the labor, but it is because it's a good thing too. But that's what if someone ordered a capillary tube of semen for enough to do 8 queens, that's what we would send them. Here is the tip of the syringe, so you can get an idea. That's the tip. That's the tip, and then the tip is connected here, right in this joint to the capillary tube. And John Harbo, the guy who did the original SMR work that is now VSH, he invented this. This is his invention. So it's called the Harbo syringe. And what's great about this is after you do the collection, you can detach this and plug this thing up, and then you have that capillary tube that you can store, and it keeps for 2 weeks, or you can mail it, or whatever you want. Here's the skilled activity in action. So this is Kelly, and that's what you have to do. Now, why this is even harder than obviously it looks is right here you can see that's the mucus. And what happens is the semen rides, as I sort of demonstrated to you, it rides on the tip of that, almost that bowl. And you can't get mucus in here because that ends the effort. Once this fills up with mucus, you can't use it. So you've got to be really careful to get just the semen. How do you do it? Do you pull some up and then pull some out and pull some? So
if you just hardens very quickly with it, it's air, so it will form a plug that will then
When you get a mucus plug, are you happy?
No.
It's usually when I take a break. It's like, oh, I'll see you in a bit.
Yeah. Gotta go.
It happens a lot.
So if you've done 30 drones and you're ready to do 31, and you pull a plug, can you just push that little bit out to clear it?
If you realize that you do it, yes, you can get it out pretty quickly.
We can't tell from the pictures here, but can you see the color differential between the semen and the...
You usually can. Usually you feel it before you see it.
Oh, you feel the resistance.
All of a sudden, your column stops moving.
Got it.
So, and in fact, you need to see very small things in that column under it. You barely have
Yeah, that's a good point. That Kelly is looking at this through a microscope, so it's not just this view; it's really heavily detailed.
Do you have a wrist jig of some sort to hold everything steady and give you leverage?
No, I don't. I just do everything
through. Wow.
Because depending on where the semen is on the tip, you got to move that ball around to get to get
yeah,
it all.
Yeah, and that's just my hand moving it around. I usually just have my wrist sort of resting on the edge of the platform.
But the tip of the capillary is still that's fixed.
Oh, okay.
Each queen receives how much semen from how many drones?
Good question. It really depends. We give 10 microliters, so that's anywhere between 8 and 25 drones, depending on how full they are. Sometimes you don't have enough, so they get 9.
Yeah.
The recommendation is no less than 8 and no more than 13.
I see.
That's it right there. That's the hardest thing to all this insemination is that. If you can master that, you can do insemination also. Here's a look at it from above. That's the holder, and that's where the syringe is, and then you can see the hydraulic line coming down, and here's where it connects in. And another view.
Look at all those bodies.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's funny. That's good eye. So that was an old picture. That was like in 2090. That was right. So we have much better hygiene. We have bowls and put it in bowls. No, it's that's messy. So now we're into the virgins. We covered the drones. The virgins need to be sexually mature to get inseminated, older than 7 days. How old? Well, as long as they're kept well, you can inseminate up to 20, 21 days. You've done older ones. You look at them when you're getting ready to do them, and if they're in good shape, then you do them. It takes them longer to lay if they're older. But they need to be healthy and well cared for. You basically want to have a bunch of nurse bees around where the queens are. And that means that you have the queen's cage in some kind of cage in a bank, or you have them caged in a bank with attendants. All of our virgins are kept with attendants. We use 4 attendants, and you have to change them out usually like every week, and that gets to be a pain. Sometimes the virgins will kill all the attendants in the cage. For no reason, I don't know why, and then put new attendants in. But I've kept and grown and tended to a lots of virgins, and people can tell you otherwise, but they do much better for me with attendants. A lot of times you'll see, and we'll show you here. This is Tom Glenn, and this is also stock USDA. This is a Harbo design, or maybe not even earlier than Harbo. This is a virgin bank. And each one of these is a virgin. And this is in a colony with the open brood on each side. And workers can't get through there to touch the queen. And so in the hive, workers touch the queen. So I never liked this method. I always felt that it was better for the workers to be in contact with the queen. So we didn't use this, although Tom used this for years and said it was fine.
But they can still feed through the holes.
Oh, they can feed, and they can even stick their antennae through, but there's no real touching.
No grooming. No
grooming. So we hatch out, once our cells are sealed from our cell builders, they come into an incubator, and we keep them in the incubator till the day before they're ready to hatch, and then we use JZBZ cages because they're standard. We ship in a JZBZ cage, we hatch a virgin in a JZBZ cage. You don't have to switch cages. We used to use the square cages, hatch out in the square cages, and then transfer them to JZBZ cages. You can't imagine what a pain it is to switch queens from a square three-hole cage to a JZBZ cage. It takes hours. And after many hours of doing it, I thought, you know, we got to figure this one out because this is just silly. So we came up with this holder that holds a JZBZ cage upright with a charge of candy. The queen cup and the cell fits in the entrance to the JZBZ cage, and then that'll hold the attendant bees. This whole thing slides into the incubator, and then you check it every couple hours, and as queens hatch out, you take the queen cage or the cell out, close it up, and then that queen is moved out of this incubator, which is set at about 94 degrees, to a lower temperature incubator at about 80 degrees. And the virgins are kept there until I get enough, and then I'll go and take them out to the virgin bank. Another fellow hatched out his virgins. This is a cooperator we have, and he's a resourceful guy, so he was using ice cube trays in his incubator. And the trick is just keeping the queen cells upright in the JZBZ cages. So this works great, and if you see anybody else with these circular things, we came up with it first.
Patent number, right?
This is how the virgin bank is. And when we're really cooking, I'll have three of these full of virgins. But basically, it's really simple. It's the same JZBZ cage. You can see the queen's, the mark there. Notice that there's each one has its code. And then I found the best is four attendants. And I try to get really young nurse bees, newly hatched bees. I put them in those, and they can hang out in there for a week. And then you got to come back through, check the attendants, and refill the candy, and recharge the frame that's next to this with wet open brood again. And the idea with that is to just keep the nurse bees near this, so they're well fed. And we have had good luck with this method, and we can keep virgins pretty healthy for a long time. This required some trial and error to get this down.
Could we go back a little bit? I've got it recorded, but I want to make sure I understand this. You put the nurse bees in with the queens before they emerge?
So you're talking about this slide or just in
general? Maybe the one after that? There, on the left. On the left, right there.
Yes. So
you put them in there, and then you cap it with the queen cell, and she comes out. She's already with her attendants.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
It works fine. And you can, these can be nurse bees from any colony. Because as long as there's a cell there, there's cell pheromone, and they're like, I don't really know you. I don't know what colony you're from, but hey, there's a queen cell here. Let's attend to the queen. Once she hatches out, they all attend to her.
Okay.
Does it make a difference, like you said, holding her after she's 7 days old? But if you're holding those virgin babies like 2 weeks or whatever, the longer you hold them and then make them, to benefit their viability?
No. So the question is, if you have a virgin that's kept for a while and then you mate her, will they not be as good as a fresh virgin? As long as the holding colony, the bank colony where this is, has enough nurse bees and enough pollen and nectar to keep these guys well fed, they can sit in there 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. You inseminate them, you compare them to really fresh ones, there's no difference. They look, they're both good. After 3.5 weeks, then they're starting to get old. You know, then we try to get new ones in, or we use new ones. But it's always good to have a few extra around just in case. Then we've got our virgins. Any other questions on any of that stuff?
Well, I'm just thinking that doing it that way, you can then determine when you're releasing that. Well, if we weren't artificially inseminating, but if we mated them in the wild, we could watch the weather and determine when we're going to have good weather for mating purposes rather than taking a chance.
That's true. The only thing is, with natural mating, I think it's good for the virgin to be in that colony with the bees interacting with them. So if you took a virgin and you had her out for a while, you would have to introduce her into a colony. And then once she was introduced, then she would mate. So there would be two steps. And just with anything in any of this, the more steps, the more chance for mishap. So if I was worried about meetings with weather, I'd still introduce a virgin in or a cell into a mating nuc, and I'd just keep a queen excluder on the front until I wanted them to go out. Then I would lift the queen excluder. Mm-hmm. And then the only negative to that, which we've run into because we used to do that, is you have to vacuum out the mating nuc right in front of where the queen excluder is because they're, you know, all the stuff they drag out, they can't get out through
all
the excluder.
Bodies.
And then hive beetle love that. It's a best for hive beetle if there's a mess of dead bees in front of a queen excluder. So we actually have a shop vac that you go through and like vac out those bees. Okay, so for insemination, you got to have a sterile work environment. It's very important. Well, we've seen some people do some insemination, and I just one look, and it's like, oh man, I don't even want to know what's going to happen next. There are a lot of germs and a lot of virus and a lot of microbes floating around in the air, and some of the insemination we've seen is basically like, you know, where's the virgin? Can't do that. You gotta be fairly sterile. You're, you know, exposing the internal area of the queen to the air, so keep that in mind. The queen, in order to lay with insemination, the queen needs two carbon dioxide treatments. One, obviously, she's going to get when you inseminate her. It's going to knock, you're using carbon dioxide to knock her out. And then the second treatment is before or after she's inseminated, and that's usually a longer one. And why that makes her lay, no one seems to know. But we always joke about the graduate student that screwed up and knocked out all the queens with carbon dioxide, and then they started to lay. You know, who made that mistake? And then it turned into, hey, you know, this is how you get queens to lay. If you artificially inseminate a queen and you don't give her this second carbon dioxide treatment, she sometimes won't lay for up to a month. So two CO2 treatments.
How far?
24 hours. Or it's got to be a 24-hour interval. So we do this. We'll pre-treat our virgins like on day 10. We'll knock out 30 virgins with CO2. They wake up, you put new attendants in, and then any time after that, as long as it's a day later and you inseminate them, they'll lay right away. But it's gotta be after 24 hours. Another thing you've got to watch for with insemination, and this is basic queen anatomy, is that there is a little tiny piece of, is it tissue or muscle? Muscle, and it's like right here that blocks direct passage to the oviduct. So you have to do this technique that each insemination device has to get around that. And here's a better example. That's the valve fold. So our insemination device has this great whammy bar. It looks like an electric guitar whammy bar. And Kelly will get the syringe in and then hit the whammy bar, and it sort of moves the syringe over and moves the queen a little bit, and you get this straight passage in. If you don't do that, then your syringe, your tip, hits there, and if you then give a dose of semen, it will just come right out. You have to get way down in here. Any got any comments on that?
Every instrument is a little different. The hooks are different. So what that's showing right now is sort of like a big spoon that actually closes the nostril. And other instruments, I don't use that. I use it looks like a needle and actually threads a stinger through the eye of this hook. And then you lift it, you get a little bit more ability to sort of play with where the mouth hold is by using the same thing on the
We have a picture of the threaded needle coming up.
Will any of the semen migrate though if you don't hit it just right?
No, it won't.
It's gotta get in here for it to be doing anything. Because you know, once it's in here, you have to think of it this way. The spermatheca holds 1 microliter. You're giving 10 microliters. So only one is going in.
It's gonna migrate.
But you're giving 10 so that you're making sure that that's the swimming sperm are going to get to that spermatheca.
So if you try to inseminate, you can see that capillary tube on the left bottom picture is hitting the valve.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to inject semen there from the capillary tube, it's just going to back more up into the stinger and the capillary tube. It's not going to go in at all. And that's just going to cause the contamination problem for the conduct to the
Is that 10 to 1 amount of semen that you're injecting, like the lowest amount? You said only one microliter, you're injecting 10, only one goes in. Could you inject 5, one will still go in, or is that like your safety mark?
Sort of. So the sperm in the semen is whether there's a million or a billion or a trillion, the sperm is a different concentration than the actual semen.
Okay.
So the spermatheca holds 1 microliter of actual sperm.
Okay.
So you're giving 10 microliters of semen, and then in there, you know, maybe there's 3-4 microliters of sperm, who knows, but only one is going to go.
Right. Okay.
So if you're only using 5 microliters of semen,
you could end up being short. So
exactly.
That 10 number is your safety margin.
Yep. Okay. That, so yes, you're right. Another view, Kelly swatting off the tips or the hooks, and there that shows the syringe with a nice full capillary tube ready for action. The queen, it's great. We don't have a picture of that. So the queen has to go in this little holder, and this is where she rides, and this is the CO2 line, and this knocks the queen out, and that's then fit in here. But to get the queen in here, there's a great apparatus. There's like a hollow tube, and you feed the queen in. You take the virgin, and you put her in, and she goes into the hollow tube. And while she's going in, you take this thing, and you quickly butt it up against the tube. And so what the queen does is she goes to the end of her tube, she hits it, and she's like, I don't like this. And she backs up, and she backs up through her tube into this tube, and then this is what, as she's backing up, then I hand it to Kelly, and she threads it on there. Otherwise, how the heck would you ever get a virgin into that tube? You wouldn't. So someone figured that out. There you go. So that's where she ends up backing into. And you can see that's her stinger. And here she's positioned in the holder. And you can see that's the threaded hook Kelly was talking about on that side. And then this is just the sort of the pull hook on that side. CO2 line. And now she's got one side connected to open. And here's the great picture. Not because it's a great picture, but just shows everything. That's the hook with a hole, and you can see the stinger is actually threaded through there. And then this is just a straight friction hook, and then the syringe is going to come down and go there. And the whammy bar is over here, and that's moving this whole syringe sort of back and forth if it needs to be moved. There are some other hooks. For a while, there was a sought-after ruby snake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It actually had a ruby in it, like industrial ruby, and it was supposed to be really good. I don't know what happened to those. I wanted to get one to try it, but no one seems to have them anymore. And then now there's, with this one device, instead of this hook, this threaded hook, there's actually like a little mini forceps that you pinch the stinger with, and that locks it on, and you can pull it back. But you haven't tried that yet. Yeah. Here's another shot, pulling even further. This is your detail of the, you know, the, that's bypassed the valve fold and it's all the way in, whereas that's, I think that what the valve fold is like right there, right, Kelly?
Yeah, other side.
Right here.
No, other side.
Here? And okay. I do a lot of inseminations, you can tell. All right, so there's a syringe in position, and the semen dosage is being given. And that's a queen. After she's been inseminated, I get her, I glue a disc on her, clip her wing if so desired, and she gets then put near where her attendants are, and as she wakes up, she gets put back in her cage and she's done. So you've got some variations. Someone said, well, you know, if you're going to mimic nature, why don't you do two inseminations where on one day you give 5 microliters, let the queen wake up, move around, and then on the second day you give 5 microliters. And I think that's a good idea. We don't do that because, and this is Kelly's input, which makes great sense, that's two chances, another chance of stress and knocking her out and something can happen to her. So we don't do that. We did that once. No difference, really. Different volumes of semen for insemination. Sometimes what a researcher will do is, for genetic stuff, is they'll dilute semen so that they get 10 microliters of diluent mixed with sperm, and they'll give all 10 microliters, although it's only like 1 or 2 microliters of sperm, and the diluent will carry that, hopefully, all the way in. I don't know. We haven't really done that. There's some reasons why you would do that, and it's just not necessary for what we're trying to do. There's different instruments and different equipment. There's our device, which is a classic one. It's called a McKenson device. There's Joe Latchaw makes a single-handed device, and then there's some other like Frankenstein ones that are out there that work, I guess. I don't know, but you know, it's pretty simple. Once you get the technique down, it's just as long as you've got ease of use with your hands, and then as long as it's sterile, it doesn't really matter what you use. So then, after insemination, there's a whole other set of biology that kicks in that isn't applied to normal beekeeping. And this thing here, I can't stress this enough. Literally, some people should just send me the $200 or $400 or $800 for their queens, and I'll keep the money, because we send queens out to some people, and as soon as they get them, they don't do this properly and they kill their queens. And sure, they paid for them, but gee whiz. It's very simple to introduce an AI queen. You just have to follow the steps that I do 500-600 times a year and have almost 99.9% success rate. So I'm obviously doing something accurate that works. You use a pushing cage. You can hear some of the frustration in this. You know, we'll get calls from people. You send them a beautiful queen you worked really hard to make, and they kill it because they didn't introduce it properly. So keep this in mind. Introduction for the AI queen is the name of the game. Use a pushing cage. You want to have a small not populous environment with young emerging bees. You don't want to have a whole bunch of field bees with no brood and a lot of sort of hostile bees. You want to have young, newly emerging bees. You don't want a lot of open brood because open brood has sort of got its own pheromone. And you could even make a little excluded area above a big colony where you would set this up, and you go from there. Here are two pushing cages. This was one of the guys who is a VSH breeder cooperator. His pushing cage, he made out of, I think it's narrow gauge hardwood cloth, as it looks like. His is pretty big, but he's following all the right criteria. One is that there's some open spots. The second one is that there is brood that's going to hatch out. And the third, there's some available nectar. See this one here? This is from Tom Glenn, but this is just what ours look like too. There's the queen. There's some open holes. There's some nectar in there. And here's the secret to introducing an AI queen successfully. You set this cage up on where you were going to push it in. You don't have the queen in. You just have it sitting on the comb. And then you look for four newly hatched worker bees, the fuzzy little nice guys, and you feed them one by one under that cage. So there are four newly hatched bees in there. Then you put in your artificially inseminated breeder queen, and then you're good to go. That's all you need. I've had people put this cage in over this hatching out brood, and so much of the brood hatches out that they suffocate this breeder queen. So the four or five maybe new bees in there, that does the trick. 3 days later, you come back and check on this. Almost 99% of the time, you can pull it off and she'll be accepted. But after you pull that cage off, you watch the behavior of the workers and that queen. If they start to climb on her or they seem aggressive, you immediately get her and re-cage her. Most of the time, though, after 3 days, they'll leave her alone and she'll be accepted. But when we send out our queens, we send out an email with step-by-step instructions. I think next year we're going to have a PDF file and actually have some pictures, because even with that email, people say, well, I introduced her in this cage that I bought from so-and-so, and she's dead. And it's like, okay, well, that's not the instructions, and it can't really help you with that.
What is the longevity of an AI queen?
I will get to that.
Oh, okay, thank you.
So we use a divided medium frame box for our AI nukes. Very simple dado cut on each end, Luon divider, and then I use these plywood bottoms that I use a router and make a, I think it's a 2-inch route on each corner, and so we've got this nice little opening. And then dividers here, I use shingle on the top, or you can use whatever you want. And so you've got a two-way nuke, queen on each side, and then you can see here we were using some queen excluder on the entrance. We're not doing that anymore because it's really just too much work. You've got to clean them out, and it's not worth it. But that's what all our nukes look like that. It's really nice. If you need to, in a pinch, you can pry off the plywood, use this as a super. It's all the same size. Your frames are all the same size.
Yeah, I like that.
No fuss, no muss. Medium frame, four frames. We use four frames on each side, so basically frame of honey and a frame of emerging brood and another frame of emerging brood. You want sort of emerging brood. You don't want to have young brood. That is pheromonally the opposite of a laying queen, a new laying queen. Proper top. And then these entrance identification things do make a difference for drifting. We run them with and without that, and these definitely help. So I just get out the spray can and make some mess. Like my mom told me not to do, I spray on these, and there you go. We don't use excluders anymore, but you could. It's up to you. if you wanted to, or even with your idea of putting virgins in and using an excluder until you're ready for her to mate, you could do that. And then the cycle is similar to mated queen. So once the AI queen is in, she's released, we look for eggs. Once we see eggs, we let her lay up a nice frame, make sure she's laying well. Then we'll cage her, ship her out, and then immediately, like literally, you can do it the same day. As long as you have that nice brood area, as long as you can find some young bees, we'll cage another one that's ready to go right in if we have them. There's no need to wait. And these are some AI queen pictures. This is a guy, one of our customers in Georgia. He sent me this picture. He said, this is, you know, what one of our queens is doing for him. And it's always nice to get those. That looks good to me. That's a dark one, and that's a light one. Okay, so some points to consider with these breeder queens. When you get a breeder queen, you don't necessarily keep it the way you would a regular colony. They're for breeding, so you don't want them to work that hard. So usually people keep them in a nuc or a small single or a double, or three boxes. But you're not going to run that colony like you would for honey, or for production, because it's hard to find frames to graft from. So I keep them in like two frame boxes, and then if they fill up, I just rotate them around. Not two frame, but two deep mediums, one on top of the other, and I'll just keep rotating them. Sometimes I'll have to add a third box because they get built up pretty heavily. And that's, you know, good for grafting. Some people will cage their breeder queens either on a frame or using a Yenter box. And then all their eggs are the same, and that facilitates grafting. I've never had the time to make one of those. And I'm able to find the right age larva pretty quickly in these small holding boxes where the breeders are, so I don't do that, but some people swear by that. You asked about longevity of breeders. If an AI queen is made from a healthy virgin and the drones are good, and everything goes well, and the introduction goes well, she should last in 2 years. So you should be able to get her, use her for that season, overwinter, and use her for another season. That's if everything goes well. Not always does everything go well, so we guarantee you for one season. If we send somebody a queen and in a month she's laying drones, obviously we'll replace her. But this is the phone call I get. Hi, I got your queen, I had her for 2 months, and now she's superseded. And I have to then start on the questions. When was the last time you looked in the colony? Oh, I put the queen in, introduced it, and I left it alone. Well, of course she's superseded, or the colony swarmed, or something. You know, this is a breeder queen, you have to, like, manage it. So that can be an issue. A lot of times, too, the queens aren't necessarily superseded. It's that you put a breeder queen into a colony and there's a virgin in there and you don't know it. And the virgin will fight with this AI queen and usually always win. And so a lot of times the supersedure is not necessarily supersedure, it's that another queen was in there and killed the breeder queen. That happens a lot. That happens more than you think. And sometimes an AI queen will come, you'll introduce it, it'll be good, and then, you know, everything will be okay, but you sort of have this little nuc that the AI queen is in, and she doesn't necessarily at the outset have a lot of oomph, so it's sometimes good to give frames of emerging brood to bolster that nuc, and then she'll pick up. And that happens to solve a lot of the problems. Occasionally they are not good, you know. We're dealing with a lot of moving parts, and if they're not good, we try to replace them. So this is Kelly after gassing a virgin. It looks like she's been AI already. Kelly gassed her, and then she's putting her back in. These are single nucs that we have divided, so there's two frames on each side. We were using them 1 year because we ran out of space. They work pretty well, but they're kind of a pain because there's not a lot of room in them. And then this is what one of our holding yards looks like, just on pallets, and you got, you know, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, all the way down. And that's it. This is one of our customers who gets a lot of queens from us, and believe it or not, that's what it looks like where he keeps some of his bees. Pretty crazy, huh? I never can get over the desert beekeeping. And I say, how are you doing? And he says, oh, I have to feed everybody sugar this week, and I had to feed him last week, and I'll probably have to feed him next week. And this is like in July.
Wow.
So, I don't know. So, any questions?
When you order an AI queen, do you ask your customer what you're looking for?
Yes.
Or try and match your customer up to what you can provide?
Yes.
And then is there a selection criteria from you that...
No.
No.
No. I mean, I'll talk to somebody, and if somebody wants an AI queen and they're not going to be able to keep an AI queen because they just don't have enough experience, usually in talking to them, you find that out really fast. And I'll say, you don't want one of these queens. What you want is this, and I'll point them in the right direction. And then, like, often we'll get requests for a pure VSH queen, and I try to talk people out of them because they're hard to keep. Not because they're difficult, it's just because of that VSH trait being amplified so much. You've got to keep those nukes going with adding brood in. They're generally pain, and unless you really need to have that first cross, which is 100% VSH cross out, you know, you can get a Paula, and you can get one of our other lines that has pretty good VSH in it. And those AI queens are much easier to handle, but, you know, some people want that pure VSH. But you got it. I mean, a lot of it is going back and forth, and the communication is really important because there's a lot going on with these things. And if you spend $200, you get something and it dies, you're not happy. We don't want people to be sad, so we've got a lot of communication.
How much is too much VSH?
It's 100%. I mean, you know, you want to, if you have a pure VSH queen, it's just, you'll know it, because it's doesn't really make that very, very good brood. It's removing a lot of brood. The only pure VSH queen you can get is if you've got one from Baton Rouge, which you wouldn't be able to get one because they don't let them out. Or if you ordered one from us and we took a daughter from a pure VSH from Baton Rouge and used drones from another pure VSH. I don't make very many of them. That would be a pure VSH queen, and they're just not production worthy. They're breeders. So the brood is spotty, and they're hard to keep.
Yeah.
Once you graft them, they're great, because then it's 50%. So. Mm-hmm.
Is that a good place to start, is that 50%?
Sure. Yeah, and then what the common scenario is, you make a bunch of those queens, and then you don't really worry about them, because even if they supersede, those drones are going to now have VSH in them. And the next round, you get another 50%, and hopefully they're meeting with that first 50%, then you're going to get higher expression. It takes a while. It's not instantaneous.
At what point will the rest of the queen production environment be there? I mean, at what point where you know, you bought those queens out of California and they were horrible? At what point will all the producers have? They all say they're selecting, right?
Okay.
But what's their criteria and what are they actually doing is another thing. But I mean, at what point are production queens going to have?
That's a good question. Okay, so the answer to that question is, if all chemical treatments were banned, everybody would have VSH, high VSH queens, real things, because that would be the only way for them to survive. But if you can save time, energy, and effort by throwing on a treatment of something, knocking the mites back, and you're in business, unless you're very fixed in your ideals, you're going to take the bottom line answer over anything else. And so the queen producers that are thinking ahead are adding in VSH now. And a lot are. But then a lot are like, why
fix a wheel if it's not broken. We're producing great queens. We're selling like crazy. We got control of the mice.
And everybody's screaming.
And everybody's screaming. So that's right. And one of the biggest queen producers in the world is looking at DSH, but is afraid that by incorporating it into their breeding population, they'll change what they've got, and they work really hard to get there.
Is that done?
No, I'm not going to say. But but the idea.
They won't know what does.
But the idea is that, yeah. You know, so they have other stuff going in other places, and they're watching. And you've got to appreciate that. I mean, breeding stock requires a lot of work to make.
You can
so
see their point on that. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, why pick the next best thing? So after, you know, DSH has been around for, what, 10, 12 years, it's starting to become accepted, and it obviously works, and people are doing well with it, so I think it'll be around more. But, yeah, it's basically time and money. Yep.
Have you done any work with the adult bees that actually go around chewing up the mites?
Yes and no. Even before the mite grooming stuff from Purdue, there was chewing up the mites. And I think that probably in selecting for resistance through the bond method, through using alcohol wash and even using DSH, there's probably grooming components in there too. And if you're looking for that, you would find that. At Purdue, the mite chewing, they're looking for that. They're not looking for DSH because someone already is looking at DSH. And, you know, they can't say, well, we're writing a paper on what you get as well. So they're saying, well, let's look at grooming. And they found grooming, and they bred for grooming. So now there's grooming as well. So a practical breeder will hope that grooming and DSH is combined in everything they have and is being expressed. We tried some of the grooming stuff when it first came out and crossed with some of our other stuff. They made very nice bees, not much different than what I've already seen. So I'm not, you know, flying the grooming flag versus the DSH flag. It just, if it does well without treatment, that's what you want. And so you grow select for that. And if you add in a little grooming from that breeding program and DSH, and you're still doing well, it's good. It's working. But I think that behavior is there and it can be selected for. I don't know if it's as effective as DSH or if it's more effective. I don't think there's enough data yet. Some, you know, maybe someone will have the big cojones to do a test with pure VSH hybrids and pure mite chewing hybrids and see which does better. But that's probably not going to happen because they both work together. So they wouldn't want to compete with each other.
Grooming trait, isn't that a recessive trait? Isn't it something that you're always continually have to be selecting for?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's recessive or not or how it's expressed. I know that if you want it, you got to select for it and keep selecting for it.
Yeah, how about what's the essay for it? How hard is it to figure out your bees here?
They write, it's in, they wrote,
yeah,
about it.
Yeah.
A screen.
Right, it's like two frames in a screen cage, and then you got to look at all the mice.
Yeah.
Counting how many are chewed and how many are gnats.
Yeah.
Compare it to your other hives.
We did that.
Yeah.
It's science. I mean, it's a lot of it is grunty, boring work.
It's a lot like work.
Yeah, oh, totally. All the assays are,
you know,
that's why people don't do them.
Yeah.
It's much better to treat and go, you know,
right.
Treat and go fishing.
Yeah. or the bad method. Okay, they die.
Okay, they die, right.
Won't breed from those.
Yeah, you said something about being able to take the semen from the bees and then store it somewhere. How do you store that? Do you store that in the refrigerator or what?
Semen can be kept for 2 weeks in perfect condition at room temperature.
Okay.
It's got everything it needs for 2 weeks. And because of that, it's very hard to chill it down and store it the way you would store cow semen or boar semen or anything. And they're working on that now.
Yeah,
where they can do the long term. But because it's so perfect as it is, it's got all this stuff wrapped around it. So if you freeze it the way it is, it'll kill it. So you have to, in a way, what do? They do rapid, or they freeze it over and over again? Yeah, so they, so it doesn't crystallize. And they're working on getting that perfected so that they can really do it. Like, they have stuff frozen now, and I'm sure in 3 or 4 years they'll revive it and see how viable it is. And once that is down, that'll be great, because then, you know, stuff can be stored. But it's insect semen, which is totally weird compared to mammalian semen. And then also, you know, it's got everything it needs, so you almost have to defeat the purpose of the semen in order to store it properly. So.
Yeah, and we can ship almost anything anywhere in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, really, I mean, yeah.
We could send semen to the EU and they'll use it. They're dying to use it. It's just all those hive beetles that are going to get in the...
I think it's just the eggs, right? The eggs are in there with the semen. Crazy.
So could a 100% VHDFH colony store itself?
Good question. Probably. Probably, it probably wouldn't do well.
They'd clean themselves to death.
Some. It's funny, too, because some are better. It depends on not only how much VSH, but also how inbred that colony is, so how homozygous the sex expression is. So if that colony is 100% VSH, and in the breeding program they have at Baton Rouge, that's a closely related colony, it's not going to do well. If it's by chance, not that closely related, but still has a high VSH expression, that should be fine. It's just they have a finite number of colonies that they have worked with, and they're pushing the wall now. You know, after 10 years, it's hard to maintain a closed population for all that time. That's one of the things, that's one of our jobs in dealing with them, is being their cooperator. We send stuff back to them, and so hopefully some of the stuff we send back to them will broaden that pool a little bit by adding in new stock, new combinations.
How many different breeds of bees do you actually work with?
We've got pretty much a bunch of different kinds of Italian types, and a bunch of, and really one dark carny type. I'll define Italian by bold brood nest, stores a lot of honey, overwinters fairly well, but might eat some of its honey and it might need to be fed. That's what I consider to be a normal Italian. A carny would be really tight brood nest in the winter, great overwintering ability, rapid buildup in the spring after a lag, so they don't build up as quickly as the Italians, normal honey production, and then good fall wintering behavior. I would define as a carny. I always say in September and October, I love these carnies. I'm so glad I have them. And in February and March and April, it's like, I love these Italians. I'm so glad I have them. That's those two types.
Have you worked like with the Minnesota Hygienics or anything like that?
Sure, that would be one of those Italian, you know, in that Italian type. We had for a while some of that. And then, you know, as it got harder to get, you know, as it was passed on to those cooperators and Glenn didn't have it anymore, it sort of became harder and harder to get. I'm sure some of the stuff we get from Texas is Minnesota Hygienic based. I mean, you have to think, though, when there's areas where there's hundreds of thousands of colonies and all that mating, you know, the type kind of goes out the window and whatever is good, they pick from. So.
You said the drills need to be 32 days or older from maturity, but yet in your picture you were picking up the drills as they were coming into the hive. How do you know they're mature enough?
Mostly those drones that are coming in at that time period, which is in the mating flight, are the mature ones. That's why that's such a good way to get them, because if you time it right, those guys coming in are perfect.
Right.
They're exactly the right age. If you're too early and you put that cage up, you'll get all the young bucks that are going out for the first time.
And so you'll get a big cage full of immature drones, and you'll sweep like 40 drones, and it's like, I got the wrong age drone. If you wait too late, you won't get good ones either. But it's right, there's this flux when they just, they all come in, they all go out and they all come in. And the majority of those, probably 90%, are there for single drones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got
it.
Anything else?
You said that when you do your drones, they have to put three drone frames in each hive then?
At least.
That way that you get a good saturation?
Yep, and just when we go to one of those colonies at the golden hour, I want a lot of drones there because I don't want to sit there for 2 hours doing that. You got to bend over and pick them up. It's hot and the sweat's going on you, your glasses. You know what it's like. It's great fun.
That seems like a lot of drones. Do you use that many drones for just the AI, or do you use that in open mating too?
No, it's just for AI. No, we don't open mate hardly anything.
Oh, you don't?
All a few by chance or, yeah, you know, rare. Uh-huh. But mostly, that's why we do it for AI. Yeah. If we weren't doing AI, we wouldn't have so many drones. We'd maybe have one in.
Yeah.
But it really saves a lot of time. When you're busy season, you're basically working, you're managing your colonies, and then you got to go collect drones, and then you got to bring them in and deal with them or bank them, and then you're probably doing queens, and you know this is into the night, and then in the morning you're starting all over. You know what it's like, but that drone thing, that takes up a lot of your afternoon.
So roughly how many AI queens are you trying to produce in a typical year?
We sold just almost 300 this year, and I would like to sell 500 a year. That would be great. If I could sell more than 500, that would be really great. But around almost 300 this year.
In an hour of AI work, I mean, once you've got the drones together, to actually make the insemination, how many queens can be on average in the real world inseminated in an hour?
If you have everything all set and you've got the semen collected and everything, you can do, 15 queens in 3 hours? More? If you know, with everything set in. I mean, once you get everything ready, you can just blast through them. It doesn't. That whole thing that you saw with the pictures, it takes like about a minute to do that. It's not a long process.
It's somewhere like, could be safe. Ten
and 12 an hour.
Yeah, but how many hours can you do that?
Three.
You have a harder time collecting the semen because it's hard on your eyes.
It's an 8-hour day, but you know, can you sit there and look through that microscope in 3 hours?
3 hours, then it's great.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Or a nap.
Yeah.
Sometimes the schedule gets adjusted.
And are you ever challenged to find enough young nursery frames to support all those?
That's a good question. So she asked us, do we have enough young bees around it? No, but we have a lot of support colonies. We run a lot of colonies in each yard that are just for the brood production. And I sometimes think, why do we have all these colonies? And then when we are rotating the brood frames, it's like, oh, this is why we have all these drones. And ideally, if we were in an area that had better honey flow, you could double it up. You could have supers on some too and be making honey as well. We do, but we mostly feed it back because we have such a crappy honey flow. We make surplus honey like once every 4 years. The rest of the time, it all goes back and then you're feeding as well. Nice honey, but not much of it.
How much money do you have wrapped up in this artificial insemination equipment?
Not that much. Do you remember Steve Tabor? Does anybody remember?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Steve Tabor, about 13 years ago, I heard that he had some insemination equipment, so I called him up and said I wanted to get into it. And he was pretty gruff, and he was like, yeah, whatever.
I've heard your story before. And so someone else said, get Kelly to call Steve, and Kelly should talk to him. And Kelly talked to him, and we got the insemination device for a really good price after Kelly talked to him. I don't know what she said to him, but it worked.
Whatever worried was, it worked.
And then, you know, the microscopes, they're not that much, really.
No.
And then the device, we got another device to have, too. And that, the getting a new device, not from Steve Tabor, is kind of expensive. But, no, it's not that much. It's not that much.
Is the microscope just a standard dissecting microscope?
The one she had, the one in there is a really rare, cool, old Zeiss.
Okay.
It's beautiful. It's like a work of art. And then we have another just standard late 60s Nikon bifocal. Another work of art, just different style.
Right.
But, you know, very straightforward. You can get them off, find them on eBay.
Yeah.
You want a wide... What is it, a wide depth of field?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know, I missed one.
Anything else? Anybody else?
How are you banking your queens?
Which queens? The virgins or the ones that are...
Either one.
Okay, so the virgins we have in that on that bar in cages with four attendants. And that's above an excluder. And it's got open brood on each side. So you've got a bar and open brood on each side so that they're nurse bees. And that keeps them great. The actual queens, once they're done, they're in a nuke. And they're laying in the nuke until they're ready to be shipped. Then they don't get banked at all. They're put in a cage and sent out that night.
How long can you keep the virgins in there?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes up to a month. But... we like to use no more than 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks at the latest.
So you don't bank it some native queens like they do open mated queens?
No, I don't think they would do anything. I think they would crap out. I've never tried it. We could try it, but I don't know what would happen. I think you want to get them laying so that things start to go.
Things don't back up.
Exactly. Right. Or seal them.
Or seal them.
Yeah.
After they someday put them in the nuke, how long? Wait for anybody to pass the 40? Is that what you're finding there?
After you let them out, it's usually between one day after you pull the cage off to 6 days, they'll start to lay. Once they lay, I like to let them lay up, you know, a good frame, maybe more, and see all those nice eggs. Once she's doing that, from then on, she can be shipped. And sometimes she's shipped right away. Sometimes I'm waiting for her to lay that up so I can ship her. But I got someone saying, I need a queen, I need a queen. All right. Thank you. Very good.